What are you going to play, Sam?
We're going to play Take Me Out to the Ball Game. We're all going to sing it, too.
Episode 29, where I'm your host, Daniel Shoptaw, C70 at the Bat. Found me at cardsconclave.com/C70. With me is Alan Medlock, A Medlock 1, Twitter, The Redbird Daily, where you'll find his writing. We are recording this. We thought we would try to record this during the rain delay during Friday night's game against the San Francisco Giants. However, the rain went by faster than we could, and so we're probably recording this just as the game is getting restarted. Alan, let's do the little promo thing. Everybody go rate, review us. We like the feedback. We like to hear from you. We've gotten some reviews of late, and that's nice. Find us on iTunes. Rate us there. We'd like to get up to, actually seeing stars on the side. And always hit us up on feedback, like I said, at C70's me, at AMedlock1 is Alan, and we'd love to hear what you think. If you've got opinions about what we said, we'll interact with you. We'll talk about it, and we can admit that we're wrong a lot. So, hit us up there. So, but Alan, let's go ahead and jump right in to the Redbird Rewind.
McCarver, the first one. Now his infielders all over him. A new world's record of 17 strikeouts in one game.
And it was a shorter week for the Cardinals today. It's a really weird scheduling glitch right now. The Cardinals are going to have 4 off days in 2 weeks, and they're really going to wish they had that back in June when they've got, bunches of, a couple of doubleheaders and a couple of makeup games. But the Cardinals only played the 2 games since we recorded last. They played the 2 games against the Cubs and won. Played 2 games against the Red Sox and lost. And then we've got the game tonight against the Giants where they were winning and now they're losing. We'll get to that one in a little bit. But let's just jump all the way back to the beginning of the week where the Cardinals, again, they're playing the Cubs, and the Cubs are struggling as compared to last year, but they're still, I think everybody would still consider them the class of the NL Central right now. That's what happens when you win the World Series. To take 2 out of 3, and to do so in fairly convincing fashion, that had a lot of people pretty excited.
Yeah, including me. From the beginning, thought that was just completely set up for the Cubs to come in and win. Going into St. Louis is what they needed to kick into high gear after playing so poorly on the, in Colorado. Coming into St. Louis, I thought they could come in, win 2 or 3, build momentum, and kind of go from there. Now, the Cubs are playing better, but I was impressed by how well the Cardinals played on that, in this series. And, didn't kick the ball around too much and actually put some pretty decent baseball with combining that with the 6-0 road trip. And, I was optimistic heading into the Red Sox series.
Yeah, I think if nothing else, we got to talk about Adam Wainwright's start. Because especially since a lot of, what's what we did last week is we said, hey, Adam Wainwright's pretty much a 5-inning pitcher. You get what you get out of him right now. And then he goes out, of course, and throws 7 innings of scoreless ball. Now, again, I think you can't say, hey, Adam Wainwright's back. We saw this last year. He threw that shutout against the Marlins. He had... there were times where it looked like Adam Wainwright had turned the corner, had 4 or 5, decent starts, good starts in a row, and then he'd find some clunkers, and we know how last year went. I mean, for you, what would it take for you to say Wainwright's back? And I don't mean Wainwright's back as, but back to the Wainwright we thought we were going to get this year.
If we have a couple more starts to where he he does look like he's battling and figuring some things out, I'll feel pretty confident about it. Until then, it just feels like he's still the weak link, considering how well it's kind of a scary thought to where they would be if the starting pitching wasn't so good right now for them. They could be in a lot of trouble. So to say he's the fifth best starter on the team is not a bad thing to say right now. I'm proud of the way that he's come back. You know, I was really down on him, say, 2 weeks ago. But, you know, if he basically reinvents himself and starts getting balls over and cuts down on the hard contact, I think that's going to be serviceable. And I think if he's pitching at this level, they're going to be tough to beat. You know, even with kicking the balls around, if they don't beat themselves, they're going to be tough to beat. So give it a few more starts, and then my optimism will kind of we'll start moving in the positive direction.
Yeah, I feel like that Adam Wainwright could probably throw five games in a row like he threw against Chicago, and we would feel more confident about his outings, but we'd still hold our breath a little bit. I think waiting for that other shoe to drop. But that's just the nature of his age and such.
There's a lot of times, too, where I always felt like that with him when he was at his peak. I felt like we had mentioned this last time, when he was an elite starter, I always felt like you never had a team base that would have as many clunkers as he would. You know, it was really weird. So I knew that he was a stud, and that's who you wanted on the mound, but I felt like every sixth or seventh start, you would get one of those subprime outings.
Yeah, I did some work back, it was actually right at 3 years ago now, when I was looking at Lance Lynn. And how often he gave up the big inning, which, you know, we all always were big on Lance Lynn back then.
Seeming to
blow up, and to some degree he was. And it was right about that time that I wrote that article and did all that work, and then that's about the time he stopped doing it. But when I did that, I'd have to look it up, but I feel like you said, there were a lot of games where Adam Wainwright, he didn't just get beat. I mean, he would get blown up, you know, 7, 8 runs, 9 runs, something like that, where, and this is when he's the ace of the staff, he's in his prime. So you're right, I mean, those clunkers are coming a little bit more frequently now, but they've always been right around the edges of Adam Wainwright. And I mean, I'm sure, you know, every pitcher has some of those games, but it felt like Adam Wainwright had more of them, even than some second-tier pitchers. I guess probably because second-tier pitchers don't get a chance to stay out there for that long, but, you know, there's a lot of games. I'd really like to pull up his numbers. I don't have the play index paid for, but it'd be really interesting to pull up his numbers and see how many games that he's had in his career where he's given up 6 or more runs and do so. It would be kind of interesting. But for right now, yeah, I mean, it's a great start, and it gives you a little bit of confidence that maybe he is figuring something out, and he's going to have to continue to make adjustments. I think that's what we've said all along. But like you said, if he can continue to do that, if he can make those adjustments, you know, then maybe we can get some games where he's going 6 innings and keeping the team in the ballgame.
Yeah, that's, I think that'd be the best case scenario for the Cards, and they, as well as everybody else has pitched. I know we've had some hiccups, but they've worked themselves out. I mean, the starting pitching's been fantastic. And if you can get that from him, then you're going to be pretty good.
Yeah, I think that I saw after Michael Wacha left tonight's game, that the Cardinals starters on this homestand had an ERA of like 2.06 or something like that, something crazy. Some of that may be due to unearned runs that are behind them, and I don't know that. I'd have to look and see, but the starting pitching has been good. Now, it's a little depressing to have that good of starting pitching, and if the score holds up tonight, it's going to be, you know, what, 2 wins and 1, 2, 3, 4 losses. We were kind of seeing the opposite at the beginning of the year. The starting pitching couldn't do anything, and now the starting pitching is doing everything. Either the offense isn't doing it or the bullpen's blowing it.
Yeah, that's a very bizarre team. The Cardinals are the kings of plays not made, and mainly on defense, but also still the base running's improved, but they still do some stupid things, and it's so frustrating because they'll run themselves out of innings or they'll give away extra outs, and And you do wonder where it would be, where some of the pitch counts would be if they didn't give away some of those extra outs. So it's just a very bizarre team. It feels like they're an average to good team, but it's not eclectic at all. There's just something missing. I think you and I have both said that it's the star power that they need. I'm impressed by the way they bounced back. I thought there was a lot of quit in them after that 3-9 start. Mm-hmm. And they've shown me that, I even think Matheny's improved to where they're playing good baseball, but it's still, they just misfire too much to make me really confident they can make a serious run at winning the division.
Yeah, I just had a discussion with a Giants blogger this week, and he was asking about Matheny because obviously that's what people do. That's what I said. I think that it feels like ever since that game that when they came back from New York, I mean, and we're going to point to that, I think, all year long, that return to New York. That Matheny got better, and whether that's directions from Mo, whether that's because his options were limited, whatever, it doesn't feel like there's been as many crazy situations. Now, tonight we've got one, but it feels like the games that the Cardinals are losing, it's because, you know, the hitters aren't hitting or the pitchers aren't pitching, but it does not feel too much like it's Matheny's fault. Lineups have been better and such of that nature. It's very weird to see him make this sudden adjustment, you know, 5+ years into his career. What do you think is the cause of things getting better?
Well, he's showing more faith in guys, and I think that was my excuse last year for the defense being so bad was that the same lineup wasn't out there much. Mm-hmm. Well, it is this year, and they just still do some of the same stupid stuff. I don't know how much you could put on him. I mean, a lot of their errors, like the Jericho error tonight, that was just trying to force too many things. And then Wong the other night, it didn't come back and hurt him by costing a run, but that flippant throw to first pulls Carpenter off the bag, doesn't hurt him, but that's just the lead in. The lazy tag by Diaz, you know, I don't know. I don't think those are Matheny faults. I think he's got the right guys in this position. This is the first year I can really remember is their margin of error is low. You've said that from day one. So against some of these teams, they can't afford to make these mistakes. But I felt like they've been in almost every game outside of that Yankee series. And it's really weird. You know, there's time you can point at so many different things about how they lost it over how other teams have beat them. I don't know. It's just very strange. So I think I like how Matheny has shown more faith in these guys. Broxton is the guy that gets into he's never in the doghouse. You know, he'll get some outings to work his way back up. But like, I don't think anybody was comfortable with him coming in with a 2-run lead tonight. And he actually over the past 3 weeks has pitched fairly decent. Mm-hmm. But it's still the jury's still out. But I do see some improvements in Matheny.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the biggest. It doesn't, of course, Matheny getting ejected tonight after complaining about balls and strikes.
Boy, he was mad.
Yeah, but boy, I tell you, those were not as egregious as we saw on Thursday night. And maybe there was a little bit of buildup, even though it's a different man and a different squad. But that one against Trevor Rosenthal, where he had Pedroia struck out twice, and Pedroia winds up walking and coming around to score the third run. You know, things would have been a whole lot different if that had been a strikeout. Honestly, that game turned right there.
Yeah, I agree. And it was the two missed strike calls. It was amazing before the Bogarts triple. Now I'm going back, and I try not to blame officials because I always think like those calls. Those are just one call of the game. It couldn't be that. But though it really hurt in that inning, in that eighth inning with Rosenthal. It killed him. You know, the Bogart still, he hit a good pitch. But that shouldn't have been, you know, it shouldn't have been a run scoring triple. There shouldn't have been anybody at first. And that was, it just completely killed momentum. And you could just kind of feel that one coming. Even though it went to extra innings, I never had faith that the Cards would win.
Yeah, and you know, then the night before they're done in by their defense, which again, that's a thing that we've seen pretty like the numbers on the broadcast tonight, where something like they're 13-7 or something when they don't make an error, and they're under 500 when they do. You know, that game against Boston, they probably could have won that game as well, but you know, Tommy Pham drops a ball. Alamedes Diaz has a play that I don't know if they're going to with an error, but I mean, there are a number of players that you just kind of felt like, hey, let's, you know, where is this defense starting to fall apart again? And again, I don't think there's any good answer for that.
Well, and it doesn't feel like, I don't even know if this is the right word. The errors don't feel egregious. It just feels poorly timed. I don't know if that makes any sense. I don't know. It just seems like they're just blown up, like the Jerko error. I don't know. It's just hard to explain. I just don't know.
Well, and I mean, you almost saw that the Yadier Molina error when he goes back to try to catch a pop-up behind home plate and just completely misses it, which is so unlike Yadi. I mean, Yadi's defense may not be what it once was, but you know, you don't expect him to just completely whiff on a pretty easy pop foul. And then, you know, the guy gets a new life, he singles, you know, and it took a strong play by Jed Jergo to get out of that inning. I don't know. I mean, maybe they're just going to go through spurts where they're going to be very sharp on defense, and then they're going to go through spurts where they're not. But the problem is, like we were saying, that margin of error is not there. I mean, it's not like this team can make a couple of errors and probably be able to, you know, pull it out because of the good, you know, good bullpen or something of that nature. You know, they've got to survive the runs that they have and not give them back at all. And defensive miscues will do that.
Yeah, that's. It seems like you're right. They're really streaky defensively like that, and I don't know the answer. I don't know if we're going to if that's just what we're going to have to deal with. It sure seems like it. The Boston series too. You know, one thing that gets overlooked just because that was the collapse in the eighth is they didn't do anything after like the third inning in a 16 inning game. You know what I mean? It was pretty gross. I mean, sometimes they can never hit on all cylinders. I don't know. You know, when defensively they're playing well, the bats aren't there. You know, when the starters are pitching well, the bullpen's not there. It's just, I don't know. They just don't hit. They're just missing something.
Yeah, I mean, if they can click on everything, you know, they tear off a good long winning streak probably, or a good 2 or 3 weeks. And they just haven't really done that, and I don't know if they will. Let's talk a little bit about the bullpen. You know, the Cardinals, it feels like I've been listening to the Two Birds on a Bat podcast, and I don't agree with a lot of everything that those guys say, but there is a point of the bullpen that has some pieces that you can't trust, but they still have to, you know, if they're going to be on the roster, and that's a different story, which we will get to in a little bit, but if these guys are going to be on the roster, they've got to find them a time to pitch. Like you said, Broxton has been pitching better of late. I just don't think it turned into be a two-run game by the time he came in, but I don't think this is that kind of game. I feel like you need a little bit more of a cushion there, especially after a day off. Most everybody should be available. You know, obviously Matt Bowman came in, and he didn't pitch just great, but, you know, he was working around the stuff that he had left on base.
Sure.
He comes in on a clean inning. I don't know. Obviously, he's available. Why do you not go there instead of going to Broxton?
Well, and it was funny whenever we were doing some of the pre-show stuff going back and forth just on the group or our DMs. I was going to say, hey, I'm happy with the walk to start. Let's go Bowman. Let's go Rosenthal. Let's go Owen. Let's get out of here. And I thought we were going to be fairly quick. And I knew the minute I thought that, things were going to blow up. And that's pretty much what happened. So I don't know. I understand the guy's got to get innings. And Matheny is in a tough spot like that. But that's his gig. I mean, that's the job. But that's the one thing on top of a lot. Some people would say one of many things. But that's his biggest weakness, is pushing those bullpen buttons of when to get work and when to put guys in those spots.
Yeah, it's now, obviously, we're talking about bullpens. We should be thankful for the Giants' bullpen, obviously.
Yeah.
Given everything right back and then some, with Dexter Fowler hitting a three-run home run now, and we're up 5-3.
I thought my prediction may have come true with the man Peralta, who, with all the hate I'm becoming a fan of, I'll be completely honest. You know what I mean? I'm just like, you know what? This is really bad. You had to see this move coming. So I was glad to see him get a hit just now. But, yeah. You know, Fowler keeps doing those things to become a fan favorite. You know what I'm saying? He talked about pushing all the right buttons. Fowler could sure do it. So, go ahead.
Well, and I think that kind of goes along with what we have seen that is good about this team. It does, you know, I know everybody's tired of the slogan from last year from the Cubs, but so far it does feel like if Dexter Fowler is playing well, this team is going to do well, and he's definitely is. I mean, his average after that home run's up to 240, and, you know, it wasn't that long ago it was a sub-200 mark, mm-hmm. and they show how, you know, he's walking significantly more in May, which is a big thing. It just feels like, you know, if he gets it going, this team's got a better chance. Now, if he and Carpenter both could do it at the same time, that would be a really nice thing. That just hasn't clicked yet.
No, and that's, you know how I felt before the season. We went over lineups a lot, and I felt like I scientifically knew what I thought this best lineup would be. Well, that was considering that we may get the 2016 DS. We're not getting that patient DS right now, and the lack of strikeouts. So I don't mind him being in that sixth spot. But that being said, this lineup could be fantastic if they got if Carpenter moved up to that two spot and they had the guy in the three hole to generate, you know, to that superstar that we're talking about, which we're going to have to lose pieces to get that done. But you talk about it could be a great lineup if that was the case. So those two driving the train would be pretty significant.
Yeah.
A lot of pitches. You'd have to throw a lot of pitches.
Getting him going would be really, really nice, and it seems like they're going to try to work on that second spot in the lineup. Tommy Pham hitting there a lot lately, although Pham seems to have cooled off mm-hmm. as well from his earlier. Of course, it'd be a little difficult not to, I guess. But there are some things to go along with this team. You're right. It just feels like they're that close if they could just put it all together one time. But, you know, I think we said that. Feels like we said that for a number of years now. Maybe not 15, but there seems to be a lot of those times where we think things are going to be looking good and they're not. Let's go ahead now and shift into our up the middle.
Alisea, the second for one, the double play. What a double play by Ozzie Smith. Oh, mercy.
And as part of our up the middle segment here, let's talk about these roster moves that have or will be happening. The Cardinals today, before the game, as you kind of referenced a bit ago, activated Johnny Peralta. From the disabled list, sent Magnus, Magniri, Sierra, Mags, if you will, depending on who you ask or who allows you to say his name. He's back down to Double A, and here in a little while we'll talk. I've got a segment for with Kyle Reese from the Redbird Daily, who we all know does the minors for us here, and we'll talk a little bit about what that meant for him going to Double A. You know, obviously there's some people that are not happy with that move. There's a lot of people that want Johnny Peralta just off and gone. I think there's a lot of people that are afraid that Mike Matheny is going to play Johnny Peralta on a regular basis. As now the Peralta apologist, I guess, what do you think? I mean, why should Johnny Peralta be on?
Just like we had talked about, they're not going to release him. It's going to have to get hit rock bottom before they release him. They're going to go through. It may be the most one-sided trade in history for them to do it. But the Cardinals aren't an organization that embarrasses guys. I mean, they held on to Wigginton for a month longer than they should have. You know, it's just one of those. They just don't do it. And especially if it's a guy with history like Peralta has. No, he doesn't have much of a fit, but, you know, like we've always said, too, these things seem to work themselves out. I was surprised that it was Sierra today. I was thinking it would be a bullpen piece. I know that you and I had kind of talked on the side about that. That was kind of the surprise. I don't like the fact that they're going with three outfielders tonight and possibly tomorrow, with one of those outfielders having a hurt shoulder and one of them being Tommy Pham. You know, that's nothing against Pham, but he's made of glass. You know, I thought that was a risky move to do that today. So that, you know, they obviously have a plan behind it. But is there any situation now to where you see Piscotty activated tomorrow and it's not a bullpen arm go? Could you see anybody else? That's the thing. Today was kind of a head scratcher. I thought today would be the definite bullpen piece, and then tomorrow be Sierra. So I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean, again, you're coming off a day that you had a day off. I mean, yes, you had the extra inning game on Thursday, but that was, you know, what, 13 innings. You've had the time. I don't feel like you're going to need to be short. I feel like you're going to be shorthanded. Again, you've got eight arms out there in the bullpen. You're right. Why they didn't, again, maybe they're having trouble deciding who they want to get rid of. But even then, I mean, Tuilavala, as well as he's pitched, don't get me wrong, he has pitched well, especially live late. He's got options. I mean, Mag Sierra was doing well. He had options and needed development. They sent him down. I don't know why, even if you want to make it temporary, why that isn't the move you make right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't. It's very strange. And I think you're probably onto something. I know Brendan Schaefer said the same thing. They may be delaying that bullpen situation to see how things go tonight, because it's, you're either maybe possibly losing a guy through the organization with Sokolovich, or you're sending another one in Tuivalu, that's pretty well, right back down. I think those are your two options. So I don't know. It's it'll be interesting to see what happens. The Sierra deal, I understand. Like I even said this last week. He is a player right now. He has the skill set that the Cardinals need, and that's speed and defense. But he can't play every day just because of the bat. You know, we have more confidence in Pham when he's hot and Grichuk when he's hot, but they both have big league bats and big league power, you know, whenever they're on, and they can get into one every once in a while. You know, so that happens. I just don't think that would be the case with Sierra. I would have liked to have seen him up a little bit longer, but I knew it wasn't going to happen because he still has to develop. So I'm assuming we'll see him with the big club, you know, at the latest by the time the rosters extend. And if they make a playoff run, I would assume he'd be part of it defensively and speed anyway, because then you could fit it in a little bit better. But I thought that was the one that made the most sense. Path least resistance, he's coming down at some point anyway. Let's do it. But I think that the bullpen is making it hard on what decision or what direction they're going to go with that. So I'm really curious to see how I think they personally wanted to bring back Piscotty tonight. If he wouldn't have left the game early last night, I think he would be back too, and the decision would have been made, and I think they bought him another day. I don't know what it was. On that second tweet that Derek Gould came out with today, he said, well, Sierra's here in case something were to go wrong. And I thought, you know what, here is what they're trying to figure out in the bullpen. But then the next thing, right after I said that, is when they came out with the press release. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what direction they're going in. I would really like to be a fly on the wall to kind of find out what they're thinking on it.
Yeah, I saw that too, and it didn't make a whole lot of sense unless they still wanted to run a couple of tests on Johnny Peralta.
That's how I took it.
But, I mean, they should have felt, I would have felt that they were pretty confident in him. I mean, they saw what was going on. It wasn't like a hidden injury or anything, and he'd done fairly well in Memphis. I don't know. That was really a little bit strange too. I don't know why they didn't. I guess there's some idea that this weekend the Giants are a team that doesn't put up a lot of runs. The Cardinals are a team that doesn't put up a lot of runs. Andrew Baggerly tweeted today that the Giants and the Cardinals are 1-2 in sacrifice flies. So, you know, he may have been thinking that it was going to be a low scoring or at least a tight series. And, well, so far, I guess it has been. And so they might need the extra arms. Because once you send Tuilavala down, you can't bring him back for 10 days unless there's an injury. But it, yeah, I think that you'd rather want that extra outfielder. And when Piscotty comes back, you have to. You can't go three for any length of time. You can do that for a day or two, maybe, while you're waiting on him. So it's got to be that something's going to happen. And maybe, and again, Broxton had been pitching well. But I also noticed that it only took two batters and Broxton was out of the game tonight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great point.
They didn't let him try to work it out of it. They knew it was kind of like, if Broxton's not on, then we're not going to stick him out there for very long.
Mm-hmm. I've got a scenario for you, too. They were off yesterday. Mm-hmm. And after one bad outing, I would think that this would be the time that you wanted Rosenthal up. Well, Tuivalu got the inning. He got this eighth inning. He's got to put some runners on and, you know, all kinds of stuff. Is this one of those to where this is like, hey, let's see how he does? Because this looks like this will probably be the move tomorrow.
It could be that. I think that's a dangerous thing to be doing in a game like this.
I agree.
And I don't know if anybody is, I mean, I'm away from the TV now, so I'm watching it on here, on the computer on the game day, but I don't know if anybody's warming, but it feels like, yeah, I mean, that may be. I mean, it may be like, okay, if Tui can't make this work, then it gives us a reason to send him down.
Mm-hmm.
But if he does get out of it, you know, do they cut? I mean, and I know Brox's contract is expensive. Don't get me wrong. And I know the organization is not real fond of cutting people and paying them to go play for somebody else or paying them to sit at home. But it's tough to see that there's another move here unless you want to send Tuivalu down. And, you know, that is an option. But then, here in a week or so, Tyler Lyons is going to be ready.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going to have to come to the big leagues. And then you're going to have to make that decision on matter. Because there will not be an option there. Unless you send down Tommy Pham, which I don't think you're going to do. Or you sit down Matt Bowman, which I don't think you're going to do. You're going to have some sort of decision then.
Yeah, I agree. And that's you would have to think that those the two moves that are probably the most obvious are, you know, Tuivalu back to Memphis, because he does have options left, and roll the dice with Sokolovic through waivers. Have they seen or not? Yeah, like, Sokolovic this year has not been as good as he was last year. But that's how the bullpen works. You know, so that's tough to just stick. I mean, there was just a really nice pitch made, too. But those two would be what we talk about all the time as far as Brock's not fitting in. I think they have too much faith in the veteran. I think they like the veteran presence out there, and I just don't see them. I don't see them releasing him, kind of for some of the same factor that I say that about Peralta. The organization just doesn't embarrass guys a lot. So, you know, I really don't know the answer. A lot of the roster situations right now are a head scratcher to me.
You know, and again, I'm gonna. I always point this out with Sokolovic, and it's not entirely reasonable, I guess. Maybe it's not. Maybe it changes the picture too much. Sokolovic has a 6 ERA. You know, he gave up 4 runs in 2/3 of an inning against the Reds. He gave up 5 runs in no innings against the Yankees. You take those two anomalies out. Excuse me. And he's given up 2 earned runs in 16. Well, be probably a little bit less, but more like 15 innings. Again, you can't completely ignore the fact that he gave up those big blowouts, but I think they skew his numbers a lot. You know, I think that he's better than a lot of people think. And I don't think he would like... I mean, he could clear through waivers. It's a possibility.
I doubt it.
My feeling is there's enough need for bullpen arms.
Sure.
And especially a guy that can strike out some batters. I mean, he struck out 9 in 16 and a third right now, so it's not like he's just overpowering, but he didn't have to be. You know, ground ball rate is 65%. It just feels like he can be... I'm not saying you put him as a closer or anything, but I think he's a guy you could trust in the bullpen. And I'd hate to see them send him on his way. But the organization has never been as high on him as it would indicate, you know, his numbers would seem to indicate they should be.
Yeah, that's, you know, even after all this talk, I have no doubt in my mind that we're going to be looking at a different bullpen here in June and July anyway. I think that'll be one of the major rebuilds. So, you know, in the short term, I don't have any answers. I think it could go in a number of directions. Broxton would surprise me a little bit, but, you know, I think that's one of the areas of improvement. Mozeliak's proven to be pretty good at that. So, you know, one name that I'm proud that has pitched well, and I've heard that he's really upping his value is Marco Gonzalez.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, Marco Gonzalez made a good start this week. Another guy, as far as I know, I think he does have options. I think we figured out he does have one option year left, so he's not going to be forcing those roster decisions just yet either. But he's a guy that's definitely going to come into play sometime this year, I would think.
Yeah. Yeah, you rebuild some of that first round worth. You know, I thought he was electric out of the bullpen, you know, 3 years ago, you know, in the playoff run. And, you know, last year, of course, was nothing because of the arm. And then I think he was pitching injured even in 15. But, yeah, I'm glad that, I'm glad that he's kind of doing what he's doing. And it was funny because Gould even made the comment with those extended times, he as a starter hasn't been counted out. So that it'll be interesting to see how that works.
I guess we probably, if we're talking the bullpen, we've really got to talk again about Brett Cecil. because, again, we saw, we saw him last on Tuesday night where he walked two batters and it was walked them in eight of nine pitches were balls. I mean, it wasn't anywhere close. It wasn't anything in the Yankee pretty soon afterwards.
Yeah.
And as I say this, I realize he's coming into a game with two on and in a one-run game. So I'm a little hesitant to talk about him. And maybe I should talk about him and he'll prove me wrong. But, I mean, what do we get out of this? I mean, besides the fact that he's going the Carlos Martinez route and shaved his head, I don't know. I don't know what to think about him. I mean, you know, I know Zach Gifford over at the Intrepid STL wrote some stuff, a lot of stuff that I had to try to, you know, again, it's spin, it's spin rates and all that other stuff, and I'm like, I know that's good stuff, I just don't know that I can understand it. But it did not seem to rule out the idea that he is hurt.
Well, and you know, go ahead. That was going to be my point. The you know, last year he just got out of a big jam. You have to watch the replay on that. But last year he did not have a good first half of the season, and then it proved that he was injured, and it was a lot like this. So that's kind of my concern, is that he's pitching through a little bit of pain or maybe getting healthy. But he was nails at the end of the last season. So, you know, I'm not sure what it is. I would push to the fact that maybe he's not 100%, you know, because I kind of speak out of both sides of my mouth in this, though, because I still think bullpen jobs are so frugal that, like I said, that may be even a terrible word. It's just fickle would be more than what I was talking about. Yeah. You know, year to year, it just seems like it can go either way. Guys can lose. Guys that are great can lose it. We've seen it with Rosenthal. We've seen it, you know, with Maness. We've seen it with several guys. That may be a part of that, but I don't think he's as bad as he's shown to be. And that may be the reason. He may not be 100%.
It may be. He did get out of that inning, so we're going to continue to talk bad about him in case he comes back out for the ninth.
he
better not come back out for the ninth.
No, I was going to say, This may get turned off due to the beeping. Let's he comes back out for the night.
Let's give him the win.
The sensor may cut me off.
Yeah. I don't know. I it could be. Yeah, I mean, that is the thing with relievers. I mean, they're so. I mean, a guy was great 1 year, but he pitches 30-something innings. You know, I mean, that's barely enough time for the league to figure him out, even if you're pitching in the division. So it's not surprising when the next year they take a step back. You know, Cecil's got a pretty good track record, as much as you can for a reliever. So you'd like to think that somewhere along the way he's going to figure it out. He is switching leagues. He is learning everything new. He doesn't seem to give that, you know, he's not using that as an excuse. I don't know how much of that does factor in. But again, he's a guy that you've got to keep running out there. He has to pitch. I mean, he's a four-year contract. If he's not hurt, he's got to keep pitching. Because as much as, you know, we continue to talk about Jonathan Broxton and whether they'll cut him when he has, you know, 4 or 5 months left on his contract, you know, it'd be insane for them to cut Brett Cecil.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but again, if he's on the roster, he's got to pitch. And so hopefully they can pick their spots. I mean, again, that was the one tonight, not the spot I would have thought to pick to try to rehabilitate him, but so far it's worked.
Sure.
So, you know, maybe that's a confidence boost. Maybe he gets on a run because he's had some decent outings in the past. So, and who knows, maybe, you know, shaving the head worked for Carlos Martinez, right? So, you know, maybe that's what it'll take and everybody will start shaving their heads pretty soon. Like the Puerto Rico team, you know, dyeing their head. Their
stuff. Yeah.
I don't know. I think that's interesting because, you know, it's just, you look at that bullpen and you know, Rosenthal barring, you know, when the umpire gives him the strikes, and O have been pretty much locked down at the end of the games. Even to the point that I read somewhere that they're a little less concerned about Rosenthal going back-to-back days. They still hadn't done it, and they still, you know, but they're a little less concerned about that. You know, Sechrist is better than he was. You know, back a few weeks ago, we were really pretty sure that one of these moves that was going to be made was going to be Sechrist to the DL, and I don't think we're thinking that anymore, although somebody did point out that I think he was not available, you know, after the day after an off day recently. You know, maybe there's still some issues there, but it doesn't feel like that's a DL stand. He's pitching better. You know, you have guys like Sokolovich and Tuilevaala. You know, on a good day, everybody out there can do their job. But there's just no guarantee that any day is a good day.
Yeah, it's very true. I mean, that's it just seems like there's highs and lows with everybody, and whenever whenever everybody puts it together, it could be. I thought it was going to be a team strength this year, and I mean, I think the back end is really good with Rosenthal and O. If you can just find that complimentary piece in the seventh, figure out what you got with Bowman. And you could be, yeah, I mean, that just, it goes back to what we were saying. I mean, that's just some of those pieces fall into place, and they may not have to shake things up too much, and they can be pretty good. But, you know, it just seems out stagnant 2 years in a row that, I just think some pieces maybe need to get moved and reshuffled a little bit. And I think that in the bullpen, that's going to happen. I think that there's going to be, we'll see several different names out there at some point. But to keep your head above water right now, I think you have to have Cecil out there. And you got to be proud of how Sechrist did bounce back. I mean, this, after the last blow up with Cecil, I thought he was going to be one of those phantom DL candidates. But you know, maybe tonight, you know, earns him another opportunity.
Hopefully so. So, yeah, it feels like, I mean, Mo's probably going to make, I mean, Mo's pretty standard move at the trading deadline is to swap somebody off for a bullpen arm. You know, earlier in the year, we were talking about how they needed to get that big guy, a big stud, and that was Josh Donaldson, usually. I mean, that kind of idea. But with Jed Jerko on the plane the way he is, it becomes more difficult to justify.
Mm-hmm.
As much as I think Donaldson would still be an improvement, he's not for the value that you're going to have to give up to get him. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. So if that's, Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, so if that's the case, is there a move that John Mozeliak can make, or does he just, is he just going to be content with that little, you know, bullpen for a minor league outfielder move?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I still think that there are going to be pretty big players at the deadline, and I think there's going to be key members of this team that we consider core guys that aren't going to be here past the deadline. You know, I'm not so certain that they're not going to try to upgrade shortstop. I'm not so certain that Grichuk will be here past the deadline. You know, guys that, I mean, those are two promising players that you could get a pretty decent return from. If all of these guys are hitting on all cylinders, though, and they're all playing well, and they're all playing at a level that you feel like you could push for that first wild card spot, make a push for that division, is there a veteran out there that can hit in the middle of your lineup, and I'm not saying be, you know, hit a 35-40 homer guy, but is there a Zobrist type guy that could hit in the middle of your lineup and play two or three different spots? I'm wondering if that may be an option.
Yeah, I mean, that might, I don't know. And I don't know
who. I mean, is there a situation where you can get a Dozier, you know, that can play some second, that can play some third, that can probably play some first? You know, we're just one of those situations.
Well, I mean, I just pulled up MLB Trade Rumors just to look, and they actually have a top 30 trade deadline candidates for 2017 up right there for a top prospect. The third guy on there is kind of interesting because it's Zach Cozart. And, I mean, he's with the Reds.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
An interesting, difficult deal to match up for. But a guy that could play, you know, very good shortstop and is hitting could really slide, I would think, slide well into that two-hole that we're still trying to decide. But that means, I mean, he's a rental, so it doesn't necessarily mean giving up on Alamedes Diaz. But it kind of means he's given up on Alamedes Diaz, at least for this year.
Yeah.
And that, I feel difficult to see that John Mozeliak doing that.
Sure, and you're probably right. And that's, I just kind of wondered what direction. You know, I would like to have Cozart, but, you know, I think the big stumbling block with him wouldn't be moving a position player. I think it would be Jockety and Mo working something out. You know, I think that would be the issue. I know that he's, I know that we hear these guys, the Jockety, the Sherholtz, you know, these guys, well, they don't run the day-to-day anymore. The Kenny Williams, they still run it. You know, Theo's still considered the GM up there, and he didn't have the title. I mean, that's just how it works. I just don't know if the organizations would work that way, you know, with each other. But you're right. It pains me to say because I really like Diaz. I just think to improve, there's going to be some shuffling, you know, because I also liked Alan Craig. I got tired of the act. I felt like Tavares should have been playing. But I also liked Joe Kelly because I thought that he was he's doing with Boston what I thought he had a chance of doing in St. Louis, where he could start, he could be late inning guy because he throws so hard, or he could work those middle innings and be effective. So I liked that trade. And I'm wondering if it's not going to be something like that, if it's not going to be just a shakeup of things, or to bring in that one key piece or two key pieces, incremental improvement like you and I have always talked about. But if you can get that one veteran that you can put in the middle of the lineup somewhere to lengthen that lineup up, that can play different positions, I think that would be big. I mean, that's just one of the options. I it wouldn't surprise me for them to I don't know if you're going to trade the National League right now just because the Rockies are so good. It still wouldn't surprise me to go get a Carlos Gonzalez or something like that, to be a veteran big bat that plays one of those corners, and he's not a long-term guy. You only have him for two more years, and that's at that point you're going to figure out what you have in some of these younger guys. I don't see that happening because I just don't think that you're going to strengthen another National League team at this point that you're probably going to be chasing. But that's just an interesting name of those kind of guys is what I keep thinking that may be brought over. And that would be the only way that something huge isn't done, you know, where you lose a guy. I mean, would you wholeheartedly be shocked if Wong got traded?
I'd be surprised. I might not be shocked.
Yeah.
Before this last month, it wouldn't be a surprise at all. But being the commitment that the team has put toward him over the past month, where he's played not only every day, but every inning, until just recently he got a day off. I just feel like they're less likely to do that. Now, you can argue they should. You know, Wong still is just, you know, around that 100-105 OPS plus. So, you know, just still around league average, which is fine at second base, but you know, could they move him and move Carpenter to second and find a first baseman? Yeah, it feels unlike John Mozeliak, but I think we're gonna have to see some things that are not like John Mozeliak.
Exactly, and that's one article I've been working on, and you know, I haven't written in a couple of weeks just because of, you know, life got busy. But that's one thing I do want to put out in print before too long is we hear stepping out of our comfort zone a lot. And I think there's three or four variations that could be. You know, I won't get into them right now, but I just wonder if trading for that big rental isn't one of them.
Yeah, it could well be. I mean, I don't know. I think that, I mean, Moe's got to balance what he's doing now versus what he might want to do 2 years from now with, you know, people like Manny Machado, Bryce Harper, mm-hmm. things like that. And so that's the balancing act. And I think, I mean, it's one of those things that where we would rip on Moe if he did nothing now, but if in 2 years ago
you got to turn off your phone. I know.
No, I just keep getting distracted by different things.
But let's just put it this way. We can't say anything else, but now we know exactly how Heyman and Rosenthal feel. So that if we have any listeners, you guys can get we can maybe sound like bigwigs, but we know what's going on.
Maybe we do. Anyway, if he doesn't do it now, but he does get Machado in 2 years, that's great. I mean, then we think, okay, now we see why that happened. But mm-hmm. sometimes, in the moment, we're not going to know that.
Exactly. And, you know, part of me, too, is why I threw out Dozier is I'm not, quote, I don't, is he just this year or does he have a plus one? For some reason, I was thinking he had a plus one. And however you wanted to do it, if you got that as a middle of the lineup guy that can play second and you were to flip Wong plus to get him, well, you have a year more of him. If not, you know, rental, you got to find a place for DeJong, you know, at that point. Yeah. You've got to make sure that DS stays on that side of the infield. You know, you've got Jerko for three more seasons, and that still gives you flexibility outside of that contract to go after that big fish that we all think it's Machado, and I completely agree. You know, so I don't know if some of those pieces, maybe I'm trying to convince myself on that. But I just think that would be some of the ways that some of the direction that they would go, and that helps in all the stuff that we've considered. You know, it makes you better, gives you a veteran bat, and I think that's what they need. I think they need that big piece that's, you know, hard strikeout, can hit bombs, and is going to battle for a playoff team, and is not necessarily a long-term commitment because they're saving up for that long-term commitment in a $300 million contract with, you know, a star that we want in Machado.
Yeah, finding all those variables though can be a difficult thing to do, and then you've got to pay the price, whatever that may be.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and move on to our futures report, and then.
0-1 to Pool in the air, left field, and Pools has given St. Louis the lead. A dramatic, towering three-run home run. Stunned in disbelief here in Houston.
And we're here with Kyle Reese of the Red Bird Daily, talking the minors as we always do every week. Kyle, let's just start off with probably the news that everybody is focused on right now. This afternoon, the Cardinals sent Magnira Sierra down to Double A, giving him a little bit of a bump from where he was when they called him up originally. Beyond the whole ramifications for the major league roster, we'll talk about that later, but what does this mean for the minors? I mean, obviously, Springfield already had a center fielder.
Yeah, I guess that's the first person who's immediately who feels the impact immediately is Oscar Mercado, who had played a really, really good center field. It's his first full turn in center field. He had been a shortstop up until this point, and he worked really hard in the offseason, and it was really showing. He's a really athletic kid. So he'll feel it first. He had been leading off for them in Springfield, so I would imagine that'll change as well. You'll probably see Mags in center field on a regular basis and leading off for Springfield, and hopefully Mercado can just slide right into that two-hole, maybe not provide your traditional power from a two-hole. But, you know, you have a really solid base at the top of the lineup in Springfield. But the question that I have now is how are the corners going to shake out? Because Jose Adalys Garcia is probably best suited for right field. And it just seems like a little bit of a waste to I guess, shun to a degree an athletic kid like Oscar Mercado while he's developing in the outfield to left. It just seems like a little bit of a waste, but, you know, I keep working it over in my head, and maybe this is a sign that, you know, Jose Adalys Garcia hasn't performed very well the last couple of weeks, but maybe this is a sign that he's close to getting a bump that you can just kind of, you know, you can put him in the corner at Memphis, and then that problem sorts itself out. So, yeah, Mr. Mercado is going to feel it harder than anyone, but he seems like a smart kid who's ready to learn.
And that was kind of a question I was about to ask, not necessarily about Garcia, although that makes sense, but, you know, could there be a time, would Mercado be, had he done enough to go to Memphis if in the next few weeks, say, Harrison Bader is traded or somebody else is moved or there's an injury or something like that, is that a possibility to move him up, or does he still need some time at Springfield?
So my thought there is, you know, the Cardinals, especially since Flores has taken over, and even with Correa, they've been aggressive with promotions. You know, we've seen a lot more guys jump Peoria or jump Palm Beach and go straight from Peoria to Springfield as compared to past years. I think that they'll be a little reluctant to do that with a guy like Oscar Mercado because he has not had success that a lot of those other guys have had. You know, he went through a position change mostly because he couldn't play short anymore. It wasn't ever going to work. And they were trying to get a value out of his, you know, what was considered a light bat. And luckily his approach changed, his hands changed, his entire swing changed. So he's advanced, but he's still working on all those mechanics. And he's still working on what's going to benefit him the most. So I think that they'd be a little reluctant to promote him while he's still trying to refine all of that, while he's still trying to learn all of that on the job. I would say it would be Jose Adales just because he's older and eventually you got to start pushing him. But I don't think it'd be Mercado that would get a promotion.
That makes sense. Garcia, you're right. It kind of felt like there was an idea that I think some of us, just because of knowing that he was a Cuban player and older, kind of thought he would start at AAA. So him moving up to there by, you know, mid-season this year doesn't seem like much of a stretch.
Yeah, I would also think that if Bader gets traded, that even if Mags is struggling to hit, that Mags will slide up to Memphis and get the regular reps at Memphis at center, just because of how he'll be expected to perform at the major league level if an opening arises.
True, that's true. All right, well, unlike some weeks, you got your prospects list out just a little bit ago as we're recording this, right as the Cardinal game has started. Instead of on Saturday over there at the Redbird Daily. Let's talk a little bit about what happened this week in minor league baseball. Who's the standouts?
Yeah, I usually pick a hitter standout and a pitcher standout, a position player standout and a pitcher standout. And it was easy. Zach Gallen for Palm Beach, 8 innings pitched, 6 Ks. He was dominant. His game score was 80. He was in control that entire game. He threw strikes consistently. He's really... His velocity's gone up. He was a third-round pick in 2016. His velocity's gone up. His command of his curve and his change has gotten sharper. He ended up getting a little bit of extra rest. They used him in limited duty after being drafted. He only pitched like 9 2/3 innings, and he was dominant. I think he struck out like 13 and 9 2/3, and he didn't walk anybody after being drafted in 2016. And he's just continued on that. He has more than a K per inning. I think his K rate is like 10.37 or 10.67 per nine, and he's only walked 8 guys and so far this season. He has been lights out. He's been everything that you would hope a third-round pick would be, and it looks like if they needed a boost quick, he'd be the guy they would go to. And then on, you know, for a promotion at Springfield, if things got weird in Springfield. Now, on a pitching standpoint, you know, Gallen was great, but nobody was as good and as big in the organization as Andrew Kisner, who, by the way, ever since this whole Robert Robert thing, I'm double-checking, I'm combing through everyone's names to get to know them a little bit better. But, yeah, Andrew Kisner, who is a first base catcher, outfielder, former third base, DH for Peoria. He had 7 extra base hits in 24 at bats, and he just slugs. And he had the dramatic moment of the week on Thursday night. Peoria went to 14 innings, 15. They went to 15 innings, and Kisner walked it off, and it was a beautiful, massive home run. What impressed me most about Kisner is that he just doesn't strike out, and he walks almost as much as he strikes out, and he's done it so far at 2 levels over 315 at-bats. So he really has this professional approach, and all indications are that he hits the ball exceedingly hard. So it's everything that you're looking for in a prospect. Now, he's still learning catcher. It's a tough position to learn. We've been spoiled by how quick Carson Kelly adopted it and adapted to it. But, you know, I feel confident knowing that his bat is so good that if he's not going to be able to stick a catcher, you might be able to put him in a corner outfield if things get dicey, or he might even be able to play first base. He's not huge. You know, he's not like a Dylan Carlson. He's not that big. But I think he could handle first. But those are by far the two premier players of the week. They outshined their brethren more than anyone. It was a really, really standout week for the two of those guys.
I know we've kind of talked about this in the before, but refresh my memory. Would Kisner be the next guy in the prospect rankings at catcher behind Carson Kelly in the organization?
You know, it's kind of interesting because I think going into the year, most people thought it'd be Jeremy Martinez, the sixth-round pick out of USC, who would be that, like, that next guy after Kelly. It'd be Kelly, Martinez, and then they've got a guy who's probably going to be in the Gulf Coast League or maybe Johnson City or State College. His name is Dennis Ortega, who's kind of an interesting catching prospect. But he would have been in the conversation. Ortega, Martinez, and Kisner were the three guys who the Cardinals brought early to spring training to get extra reps while Yachty was off of the World Baseball Classic. So the Cardinals definitely think highly of him. I just think it was kind of murky where he stood organizationally, but right now I would say he's two behind Carson Kelly.
Interesting to see. Now, you know, last week in the show we talked about Springfield a little bit because I was going down on Saturday to watch them. Didn't see much of a game out of the Cardinals, and again, Sandy Alcantara continued to struggle. Is there any talk? I mean, it's got to be a little disconcerting. This is a guy that Mozeliak thought could jump to the majors this year. Has his star dimmed at all with this, or is it just learning curve?
Well, you know, in my opinion, it has. It has just dimmed a little bit. Now, I will say, with that in mind, it still was an aggressive promotion. He had only had six starts at Palm Beach before he, you know, at the end of the season last year, before he got moved, before he got jumped to Springfield to start this season. But, what concerns me is his fastball isn't playing the way that it has. Like, it's still fast, and he's leaving it over the middle too much, which is a problem, and it's not working the same way, but it doesn't seem to me like it's moving the right way, which is a concern. I think with Mr. Alcantara, with a little bit more seasoning, with a chance to really refine his stuff, like, he'll be the guy who, in the second half, is really lighting everybody up. He's just still so young, and that jump to Springfield is so tough, especially for pitchers, and especially for pitchers who haven't had time, a good amount of time at Palm Beach. The question is, what will it do to his confidence? If it destroys his confidence, then you really have yourself a compromised prospect. He seems like a smart kid. I don't think it'll mess with him so much, but, you know, the other interesting thing about Alcantara struggling at Springfield is, for Peoria, another top prospect, Ronnie Williams, has struggled greatly, and he struggled so bad that they had to move him to the bullpen to work things out, and he hasn't pitched well at all out of the bullpen since being moved there. So, you know, I wonder if the Cardinals are kind of using that as like a learning curve for what they're gonna do with Alcantara. I guess time will tell, but I would imagine that he'll stay in the rotation until he has one of those two-thirds of an inning, you know, six-run outings that really, really start waving the red flag.
So we're still, I mean, in your mind, we're still a little ways away from a Mikel Clido situation where the guy's got an amazing arm but has no idea where the ball's going.
How dare you bring up Mikel Clido?
I know. I don't want to tar with that brush if I don't have to, but that's the first thing that came to mind because I'm limited.
No, you're on. That's exactly what it is. So many, of course, you know, Clido was a little different because he was a swing man almost from the beginning. Mm-hmm. He would get relief innings, and then he would pitch like a six-inning gem, and then they didn't know what to do with him. So the circumstance is a little bit different there, as you know. But, I think we're still a little ways from that. My concern is that you're looking at more of a Seth Blair situation than anything. You know, a high K guy who can't command the zone, and when he starts commanding his fastball, it doesn't have enough life on it to be able to do what he did at the lower levels. So I guess that would be where my concern is. But, yeah, I guess anything could happen.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and at least Cleto made it to the major league. So, I mean, there's something there. But, yeah, hopefully, again, this is, like you said, very premature because he's got a lot of learning still left to do. Finally, we cannot end a segment, at least not at this time, without talking about Luis Robert, or Luis Robert, as he's now prosaically known. You know, this may be the last time that we talk about him, at least in the subjective or theoretical sense.
Yeah.
He can sign tomorrow. You know, this may be your last chance to put a prediction down. You know, it feels like the rumors are that it's between the White Sox and the Cardinals. What's your feeling?
Oh boy, anxiety mostly. I guess sometime earlier in the week, before it started getting reported that the White Sox initially had the upper hand in negotiations, I started resigning myself to the fact that the one thing that I really respect about John Mozeliak and the way that he runs the Cardinals organization is that he doesn't necessarily ever do anything stupid contractually, and that allows the Cardinals flexibility. And, you know, as a coping mechanism, I started thinking, all right, look, if they end up having to pay a total of $60 million after the penalty and the bonus, you know, how does that limit them in the future? You know, so I started doing the coping mechanism thing. But what I think right now is I really think that, okay, so the thing I keep bringing up on Twitter, and I will stumble around this, but the thing I keep bringing up on Twitter is I feel confident that the less noise you hear about the Cardinals, the better position they're in. You know, I just really believe that. So I always believe that by now, you and I are talking right now at Friday night, like you said, right as the Cardinals are going on, it's almost 8 o'clock. And I would have, you know, a week ago, a month ago, 6 months ago, I would have told you that by now, this very moment, we would already know. And the fact that we don't already know is very interesting to me because I believe that silence is a good sign for the Cardinals. I believe that if this thing was wrapped up by the White Sox, that we would already know. But the Cardinals have a way of doing quiet business that I think bodes well in this situation. My personal belief is that if we make it through the weekend without hearing anything about Robert, that he will sign with the Cardinals. But if we start hearing, you know, Jeff Passan wrote that he already has an agreement or he already has a team, he's already picked a team. Well, that's, in my opinion, that's BS. It's total BS because, and it's probably just an unfounded rumor, because we would know by now. It would be official. It would be done. You would hear Rosenthal would be reporting it. Heyman would be reporting it, you know, and then tomorrow he would sign the deal and it'd be, you know, sugar plum fairies. The fact that we haven't heard anything, it just screams Cardinals to me. So, you know, I guess my head is telling me that it is almost certainly the White Sox, but, you know, kind of reversing how it normally is. Like, my rationale is telling me that the Cardinals are actually in the better position for this. So, you know, I'm honestly at about a 60% that I do think the Cardinals are going to sign him. And the longer it goes without hearing anything, I really do believe the better it is for the Cardinals.
If the Cardinals do sign him, I'm going to be very interested to see in the comments how much the signing of Garcia this offseason made a difference. Because apparently Robert and Garcia are very, very close friends, both, you know, coming out of the same area. They talk to each other a lot. And, you know, Garcia, at least so far, does not seem to be anything but pleased with his time in the St. Louis organization. If that happens, I just wonder if that's going to play a little bit of a role. Obviously, the money's going to be the biggest thing. But I wonder if that's going to at least give him a chance to look at this organization and be confident that he's making the right choice.
Yeah, that's a really interesting thing. I have a pretty good feeling that the two things that it's going to come down to for Robert is cash. He will absolutely take whatever the highest bid is. You're right. Adolis Garcia will play a role as like a tiebreaker, I would assume. Say that both teams are unwilling to budge over $28 million. Maybe then he looks and says, all right, you know, this guy who I've played baseball with forever now, that's where I'll go. But the other thing that's getting lost in this, and I'm not familiar enough with the White Sox depth chart, and this is my big failure in all this. But Jose Adolis Garcia said that the one thing that he has commented on in regards to Robert, because he stayed out of every other comment, but the one thing that he did comment on was that he's definitely looking for the best opportunity for himself.
Yeah.
And I guess that's the one thing that concerns me in all of this, because if you're talking about the best opportunity, it might not necessarily be with the Cardinals. Now, that doesn't mean that the Cardinals wouldn't clear a path for him, but, you know, the one thing that the Cardinals do have is outfield depth. And, you know, if they don't sign him, that's one thing that you're going to hear the organization shoving down your throat nonstop is, well, we've got all this outfield depth. You know, we decided that it wasn't worth spending over because of all the depth we have. But part of me wonders how badly that hurts the organization.
And that's probably going to play into it. You're right. Because, I mean, if nothing else, the White Sox are a struggling team that can afford to, you know, run him up to the majors faster than the Cardinals do, because they're not, you know, unless they get into a stretch where they're expected to win about the time he's wanting that, he could make that jump faster. But again, that's the other thing. I mean, does he want to play, you know, for an organization? Is the best opportunity for him a place where he can play immediately, or if he can place where he could play for a long time and win a lot of games? You know, that's kind of that argument we have about any free agent. They want to come to a place that has, you know, proven that they can win and that are going to try to win on a constant basis, or do they want to go someplace where they can play, you know, quicker? So that is an interesting thing. You're right. I would imagine that the path is easier in with the White Sox, and that may force the Cardinals to go a little bit more than they want. That's the quote that was floating around from Derek Gould today, something about finding out where the edge of their spreadsheet meets the beginning of their urgency or something like that. They may have to throw a little caution to the wind and try to do this. But we'll find out. Again, tomorrow's the first day he can sign. Doesn't mean that he will. He has to sign, by June 15th, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, that's correct.
So it will not be long before we know where he is going, and then all the recriminations on whatever side that doesn't win can begin. Because it seems like some White Sox fans are kind of like us, expecting them maybe to come a little shorter and going to complain about ownership not spending the money. So that should be fun.
You know, one thing, a funny thing, and not to comment on another team's fans or even the Cardinals fans, but one thing I found interesting, and through you guys, through a lot of what I refer to as like the senior tweeters, you guys have been around, you know, yourself, Daniel, you're like the godfather, you know, they call you the podfather, right? Yeah. You guys are like the senior Twitter Cardinal people. You know, the one thing that I respect about you guys is none of you have stepped out of your bounds and said, you know, I know someone involved, like I know someone in the front office, which I have seen a lot today through White Sox Twitter. You'll see a lot of guys who blog for White Sox that have, you know, 7,000, 6,000, 5,000, 9,000 followers who are they're all claiming to have a source, and they're all their sources are all giving contradicting testimonies. And I haven't seen that once from Cardinal Nation, which makes me exceedingly proud to be a member of it. So, you know, bravo, Don Shoptaw.
Well, and I think that it goes back to tie this all together. It goes back to what you're saying. That I think people don't say, hey, I know they're going to do this, because the Cardinals don't leak stuff. Mm-hmm. And if you came out and said, I know the Cardinals are signing this guy because a source told me, nobody would actually believe you, I don't think, because that's not the way Mo works, and Mo has proven that he can keep secrets under. I mean, you know what? Dexter Fowler just happened to be seen at an airport. Otherwise, you know, we have a press conference and all of a sudden he's there, you know. So
yeah.
I think that's part of it too. I don't want to give us a whole lot of credit. I think it's just the fact that even if somebody wanted to put that off on out there like they do what they're doing, it wouldn't go very far. So anyway, anything else out of the minors for this week? Or
No. I mentioned it. The cool thing about Mags going down to Springfield is that sorry, right around the corner. Yes, giving directions. The one really cool thing about Mags going to Springfield is that it's only 3 hours away from St. Louis, and you can make a really awesome weekend trip out of it. And, you know, go see Mercado and Mags and Adolis Garcia while you have a chance, because that's going to be a really exciting outfield no matter how they structure it.
Yeah.
So get out if you can. If you're close, take a weekend. Go enjoy some minor league baseball.
Yeah, just maybe pick a day that Al Contreras is not pitching.
you poor man.
Kyle, love talking to you, and we'll do it again next week.
All right, thank you, Daniel.
We appreciate Kyle joining us again because, you know, we need those. I feel like I'm getting a lot more information about the minors and knowing a little bit more about these guys because we talk to Kyle every week, and so I like that. Obviously, the big news, and again, we don't know anything. We're trying to, you know, everybody's kind of scrambling around with it coming up here, probably maybe even this weekend, is the Robert signing with whoever it may be. Now, it feels like, as we said and as Kyle said, you know, it's Chicago or it's St. Louis. And this time it's the White Sox and not the Cubs. But, Alan, we've talked about this, but this is just feels like this is a situation where the Cardinals really have to get this done, don't they?
Mm-hmm. Oh, I completely agree. That's, you know, we have talked about that. And I'm on the periphery on this because so many guys know so much more. Like Kyle's so passionate about it, that gets me fired up about it. And then when you read into it, and you're just like, this guy may be, if not a call up this year, a year away from contributing. And you know, you five tool guys are hard to find. So I get excited about it. And then when you start seeing some of the links, and it may be down to a couple teams, and when it's about money, you're just like, well. You would think that this is the one spot where they did need to overspend and take that gamble on him being a stud outside, you know, maybe not the, you know, the Castillo from Boston that turned out to be not so good, but, you know, to be a number of the other Cubans that are really good. And it's almost one of those with the sanctions they have and all kinds of stuff. I do agree with you that I think they just need to be all in.
I will say I finally read an article that tied the Robert signing, if the Cardinals do sign him, to the hacking scandal by Chris Correa, with the idea that it's almost unfair, but wrong in some way that the Cardinals are able to go and sign Robert, in part because they lost all these picks, they lost all this draft pool money, and so they saved money there. And so now they can go sign a talent like this. I think that's a stretch to me. I feel like this is a situation the Cardinals might have done anyway. I think they might have been a little less likely to if they had their draft picks. I don't think the money's the issue, though. I don't think they're losing the pool of money for signing draft picks meant, oh, we have this money now to spend it. I think they might have been able to be in the spending thing anyway. It was just, you know, it's kind of one of those perfect storm things of a great player and rules changing and this need. You know, hopefully it's going to come together and get the Cardinals a premium talent.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's funny because have we ever been in one of these situations watching the Cards do this before with one of the foreign players? I don't remember it. If we have, weren't they were finalists on one of the, oh well, I'm so glad they didn't win that with the you know, with the gong. They were a finalist with him when he was coming over, and Pittsburgh is regretting bidding on that right now, but I don't remember them being in a bidding war like this with one of the international guys. So that's why, another reason why I think it's so interesting.
It's a little bit different because, like with gong, who the Pirates did get a couple of good years out of. So, I mean, they didn't get completely wasted there. And with Byung-ho Park, I believe that the Twins got.
Mm-hmm.
It's a blind, it's a blind bid system. So you don't know what everybody else is bidding. You don't get a chance to go back and forth. You put your money out there. You put your best bet out there. And if somebody tops it, somebody tops it. So in that regard, it's a little bit different. And they did come up, you know, and probably a good thing they didn't win both those. You really got to get into the, you know, some of the Japan guys, some of the Cuban guys. And, you know, the Cardinals have really been developing their foreign system over the past few years. And they really kind of, I feel like they've looked at one segment of the world at a time and really tried to get a feel for how to translate the information, how to, you know, what does it mean to hit 300 in Japan? What does that mean over here? You know, who's likely to bring their steals over? And once they really get a handle on that, they move to another one. And I think that they've finally gotten a handle on the Cuban market. And now it may wind up being a little too late because of the way the rules are changing, but you know, I feel like that's why we're seeing the Cardinals active here, because they feel pretty confident about what they can translate, Cuban numbers and things of that nature, and what they see at a player like that into what the major leagues is going to do. So I think that's one reason we haven't seen them active in a bidding war, is because they've not been comfortable enough to do that. They've signed small players. They've signed a number of Cubans. That's one of the reasons they can go after Robert, as they went right past their limit this year, because they were finally getting a handle on those players. So it's probably a once in a lifetime situation for the Cardinals, and we'll see if they can actually pull it off.
Yeah, let's keep our fingers crossed.
That's right. Somebody who did not keep their fingers crossed, obviously, was Mr. O. As we talk about the foreign players, he, you know, coming into lockdown, a one-run game, has now given the Giants two runs. And now, after Fowler's home run, I was really thinking we were turning this around, but you know, I guess, I don't know.
He has worried me all year.
It's again, you're right. It kind of goes back to that, you know, fluctuation in reliever abilities. I mean, the league was on him for so many innings last year. I think it's 60 innings, which is a decent amount for a reliever. But, yeah, and so they've made adjustments. He's got to make some back, and he's, you know, he was very dominant last year. I mean, you could be 15-20% worse and still be a very good player. And so far this year, he's been pretty good. But, you know, a game like this, if it wasn't for the fact Rosenthal probably won earlier this week, might get you, you know, some people a little bit more anxious for a swap. All right, well, let's go into our last segment, Swinging Away.
Tying run at second base. In the air to right center. This game is tied. Going to third is Pujols, and it's 9-9. They just won't go away.
All right. This is where we get into the Twitter questions. We got a handful. Feels like I think everybody gave us, except for maybe one, gave us multiple questions, but we'll see what we can do.
It was an active week. I do know that.
Yeah, yeah. Let's see, Cassie, Pink Daisy 08, she asked about who's sitting down with Peralta, Piscotty, and Lyons. I think we've done that. What role will, and we've talked about what, she wanted to know what happened with Cecil, we've talked a little bit about that. But what role will Peralta have? And I don't know that we got into that as much. What are you thinking? I mean, how much are we going to see Johnny Peralta now that he's been activated?
Well, you know what, I don't know. Jericho has started every game since when, I can't remember his last day off. So I could see that we see a start this weekend out of Peralta. I was kind of curious that they didn't. I don't think they ever intend to have Carpenter out of the lineup anyway. But I was a little surprised that he'd have a first baseman's mitt a little bit in Memphis. Just to kind of maybe be that right-handed alternative. With that being said, I don't know. I mean, that's it just doesn't make a lot of sense to have him on the ball club with the role that's just not designated. You know, we'll see some pinch hits. I mean, he had a big one tonight. But, you know, I just don't know how he's going to be used. I mean, a right-handed pinch hitter, and, you know, you see Adams once or twice a week, and that may be how you see Peralta, which I think is going to hurt him because they're not, you know, you're playing with a short bench at that point. So, you know, I don't know. it's going to be pretty eventful the next couple weeks.
It looks like, if I'm looking at this right, Jericho has not had a day off since, well, April 23rd or 24th, depending on what day. There was an off day, I think, in there, too. So, right there, right before the Toronto series. So, if it looks like he's played ever since then. At least some. It looks not complete. He's come into the games late, so he's had a little bit of time off on some of those. But, you know, you very well may be right. Again, everybody's going to freak out any time Peralta starts, and he probably will start pretty soon. But I feel like, yeah, he's mainly going to be a bench bat. He's going to be kind of a Matt Adams type where they're just going to bring him in the situations where, you know, a good, solid veteran bat will be necessary. And again, he'll start occasionally to try to stay fresh. But it won't be, I don't think it'll be so much that everybody's just like, oh, you know, here we go again. I think it'll be pretty sporadic. And here in her other question, another question, where do you guys fall on the keep Sierra up here trade Grichuk conversation, and should Dex continue to play while his shoulder is hurt? He's going to keep hitting home runs. He can play as much as he wants to.
Yeah, that's I think that, you know, there's a lot of worrisome, and I was the first one to say the shoulder can linger all year, but he's your center fielder and he's your leadoff guy, and I think he is one that if he was lost over an extended period of time, it would probably hurt him. That's where I thought Sierra fit in well. He didn't have to lead off. He could hit in that eight hole and just play defense. I will say, even right now, I'm not so certain that Sierra doesn't make them better with the skill set that he has. But I don't think, as of right now, he's a better player than Pham, Piscotty, or Grichuk. So I think he does need time to develop. You know, he did have some hits, but, you know, none of his hits were hard hit balls. You know, and I know that's saying a lot. They're still hits, but I still like the development time. And you know me, I love Grichuk's skill set too. You know, I like the fact that, look, you're going to get a lot of strikeouts, but you're also going to get hard hit balls. So I'm a big Grichuk guy. So I'm glad the way that they went. I wouldn't be disappointed at all if the four-man outfield is Piscotty thrown into with the three guys that start tonight. I'd be happy with that.
Yeah, and I think that's the case. If Grichuk can bring something back, you know, I'm not opposed to trading him, but I don't think you just trade him to keep Sierra up. I mean, Sierra,
sure.
Again, he has a lot of talent. He has a lot of ability, but like you said, a lot of ground balls. When the league starts figuring out where to shift, you know, does the average go down? There's, again, a lot of reasons to keep him up, but a lot of reasons to let him to go down and develop a little bit as well.
Well, and I think you hit the nail on the head. Him being up all year probably hurts him more than it helps him.
Yeah.
You know, that's it. You said that. You said that can ruin a career that way last week, and I agree with you.
We got a few questions from Ben Adams, who's the P-Vine on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
Did we mess up signing Cecil? And we kind of talked, you know, we've talked about Cecil, but I don't know. You know,
it's early.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, I understand it's in all of those things together, just like you said, new league. You know, that new eye seeing you know, maybe putting a lot of pressure on yourself, maybe hurt, has a history of being slow in the first half. All those things could have factored in, you know. You'd have to be 2 years into it for me to say it was a mistake.
Yeah, I do think if Zach Duke was going to be healthy this year, the Cardinals would not have signed him.
Sure. Oh, I agree. I completely agree.
And it does sound like Zach Duke may be available. In the down
a good Zach Duke. I mean, I'm always hesitant on those guys that rush back.
Yeah.
But if we got last year, after his first few performances, if we got that Zach Duke minus those first few performances, this bullpen could already improve.
Yeah.
You know, because I think he's really good.
And, you know, honestly, I heard when he had the surgery, and again, he did it like Lance Lynn. He had it right after the season. And I think I heard at the time there was that idea that he could be back because as a reliever – he doesn't have to build up the stamina. He doesn't have to, you know, he can get that control a little bit faster because he's only throwing 20 pitches or whatever. And, you know, we saw that Lance Lynn almost made it back. I mean, he could have pitched last year if he'd wanted to, but there was no reason to for him to. And that's talking about a starter. So Yeah, I think that the jury's still got to be out on Cecil. I think that, you know, you could argue that they overpaid, they signed him too long, but I think that was the market, or at least that's what they thought the market was going to be. Are we going to regret it after a year or so? I don't know. But I think that there's still a good possibility that that will be a fine contract. Could Sierra be dangled as trade bait later this year?
I think if a team calls, you listen. But I think you'll agree with me wholeheartedly on this. The outfielder that I think will not be a card will never see as a Cardinals baiter. I think that'll be the name that gets traded. I don't even know how high other organizations see him. So I don't know what the return would be on that. But as of right now, I mean, just due to the tryout, I can see why people would be interested in Sierra. And even after spring training with guys asking if he was going to make the big league club, I can see the interest. But as far as being close to the bigs right now, I think Bader will be the one that gets traded.
I think the Cardinals would like to keep Sierra because of what he brings.
Hummel made an interesting point during spring training, and he said that, yeah, he'll start in high A. Or in Palm Beach, he said that he'll start in Palm Beach, and ultimately we'll have to that Fowler is going to have to figure out which corner he's going to play. They thought that highly of him that he's the center fielder and he's coming quickly. So I think that it was just a need. I think that they saw the spark with his speed. I think they saw the spark with his defense, and that's why he came up. Sorry to cut you off on that, but
no, that's fine. I think that. He's the kind of guy they want on this team. He fits what they want a little bit better. And I think, you know, what Bader brings a lot of different things, from what I understand. He's kind of, it feels like almost like a Piscotty. He does a lot of things very well. He may not do a whole lot of things just great, which is a valuable skill. I mean, it's valuable. Don't get me wrong. I mean, and if Bader makes it into the Cardinal uniform, that's fine. But it feels like they could replace the power other places, and they can't replace the speed and defense that Sierra has as easily. So, yeah, I don't think you put him as trade bait. If people call, like you said, if people call, you listen. That's a difficult thing. All right, and then. What honestly could we get by trading Adams? He hasn't shown much value here lately. Now, I will admit that once Freddie Freeman went down in Atlanta, my first thought was maybe the Cardinals could trade Adams to them. Because Freeman gone for 2 months with a broken wrist. Now, the Braves short-circuited that pretty quickly by signing James Loney and really had no indication, no intent, and rightfully so, of really giving up much for a 2 month rental, because whoever you bring in is not going to play when Freddie Freeman is healthy. It feels like for Matt Adams, and I know I bandied about with some others some ideas of, you know, getting a reliever for him, but you may not be able to get a major league piece for him right now. I think that you probably wind up getting less than his value. And the team that gets him could have really have something on their hands, but he's not going to play enough to raise that value any. So you take what you get, I guess.
Yeah, I agree. I'm curious to see what they do. I thought that he would be dealt by now. I think that he'll probably be with the club the whole year just because of the value that he brings as a pinch hitter. And That's they've sold him on that. That's how it's going to be. And they said he'll play a little bit of first, but we really haven't seen much out of that. So I don't know. It'll be interesting. And that's if he were to go on the market, just to kind of answer the question, I think you could probably get a bullpen piece that's maybe big league ready. You know, I don't know. Maybe a mid level guy. I'm not certain. I don't even know what they'd look for, or what it would be, but I don't think his value is high. And then teams realize that the Cardinals are, that they're helping them out more than anything. So you're not going to get much.
Yeah. The questions from our friend Scott, who we have talked to about quite often on this show, Texas Card Fan One. he's got three tweets. I think they all run together. Because he basically wants to know, you know, the idea is that Sierra needs to develop at the minor league level. And his question is, how much more can he develop at the minor league level? Do we need a seldom used first baseman pinch hitter on the roster when we have four or five other guys who can fill in there if or when Carp needs a day off? Wouldn't keeping a toolsy young player to work in the outfield with experienced big leaguers be more beneficial than minor leagues? And there's an argument there. Of course it's there. There's an argument. Scott's always got an argument. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, we know he can play defense. He still needs to learn how to run. I think we saw that. He's got mm-hmm. speed, but he still needs to figure it out. And he still needs the regular repetition and at-bats. I want to use this example, and people will probably find it pretty simplistic. But, you know, my son started playing trombone this year in intro band at sixth grade. And they practiced 1 hour a day, every day. And I listened to them at Christmas, and I've listened to them at the end of the year, and they really sound good. I mean, especially much better than I expected for a starting band, mm-hmm. Not knowing what to come into this. We have a friend of ours that, same age, or right about, took trombone with a local group that practices once a week for a little bit. And we went to those performances, and they were fine, but they weren't nearly as good as what my son's group had done. And I'm not saying mm-hmm. that because my son is in it.
No, I know. You know, yeah, I know where you're
going. I can't even tell which one his was when you're playing.
Sure.
It's that regular, everyday sure. doing it. And Sierra can't do that here. He's not going to play. He's not going to get those at-bats. He's just going to get, you know, one at-bat. He might get what? Four. He might get a start a week. Maybe two starts a week.
Yeah.
At the most. And the rest is on the bench. You know, he might not even hit because he might pinch run. I think it's going to take him a lot longer to develop at the big league level than it would when he can play every day and go out there and just learn stuff at a low-pressure situation.
Yeah, I agree. I thought that even when they got back to St. Louis after, you know, the road trip, I'm not so sure that it wasn't just facing lesser talent because the Braves just aren't – they're not very good, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. And I'm not so sure the Marlins bullpen is very good. And, you know, he had some big hits against them. They, you know, they looked electric down there. Even when they got back with Chicago, you could tell the book was starting to get out on him because he really looked off balance in a lot of swings. And then it got into his head to where, you know, they piped that fastball to end the game, you know, Wednesday night. Mm-hmm. And he just sat and watched it. You get exposed really quickly with the scouting in the bigs. You know, the book gets out on you. I think you hit on that just a little bit ago. Whenever teams start figuring you out, I think it would hurt his development to be up here the whole time. I like being around the big leagues, and like I said, I love that skill set, and I think that that's exactly what they need. But I think it would harm him as a player long term to be up with the big league team for an extended period of time right now. Because he wouldn't get to play every day. And if he did play every day, I think it would hurt the everyday lineup.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that you want him to be able to learn. And you want him to be able to make mistakes. And you want him to figure these things out. Excuse me. And you want him to be able to work on things. But that's why we have the minor leagues. Mm-hmm. We've talked about this before. We've talked about Matt Adams trying to figure out outfield in the big league level. And how it costs the team games. And obviously Sierra is not going to look like Pat Adams in the outfield, but, you know, when they start shifting, when they start knowing that they can get him on high heat or whatever the situation, whatever they know, it's going to take him a while to adjust. And, I mean, that's always going to happen no matter when he comes to the big league. He's going to have to adjust, but he's going to have more experience making those adjustments and knowing what he's good at when he can do that regularly in the minor league. So...
And this may answer itself if he were to go to Springfield and struggle, which could happen. Mm-hmm. You know, that's your biggest jump is Double-A, so you know, we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, I mean, and that's going to be an interesting situation too, because is he struggling because it's Double-A? Is he struggling because he's, you know, a little disappointed about leaving the majors? I mean, is it just, you know, going from A ball to majors, back to double A, trying to figure out exactly. I mean, there's a lot of reasons why he could struggle. So we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, I thought Matheny hit the nail on the head tonight. He goes, well, if he goes down there and he Cadillacs, then it's not going to help him. He goes, but if he goes down there and works, he's going to be back pretty quick. You know, I thought that was pretty interesting. And his terminology, I thought was great.
Yeah. And, you know, again, right now, even if Stephen Piscotty comes back this weekend, your fourth outfielder is Tommy Pham, which is fine. But like you said, Tommy Pham has a history of getting hurt.
Mm-hmm.
So if Tommy Pham gets hurt, especially for a short period of time, Sierra's back. I mean, because there's, again, unless you want to start the clock on Bader and do the juggling around that goes along with that, you know, Sierra's your only outfielder on the 40-man roster. He's going to be back. So there's no guarantee that this is a long-term demotion. So
sure,
we'll see.
I think we'll see him this year as a Cardinal again. I mean, I think he's one of those pieces that it just fit the mold of that September call-up that you can stick around just because he's lethal in the bases eventually.
Oh, absolutely. You know, just got to hope that he's more, I don't know, more Vince Coleman than Adron Chambers, I guess.
Yeah.
Eventually. And I think the development that he gets will help that. So. And our final question comes from Uncle Frank, F.R. Robinson, 1957. Assuming the Steve Carlton trade was the worst in Cardinal history, which is a fair assumption, what was the second worst trade? You know, we got one put out there.
I thought that was a fantastic one, too, by the way.
Yeah, which was Keith Hernandez for Neil Owenby. And that makes sense. Again, there were extenuating circumstances in that to the point of, you know, Whitey Herzog was just going to get rid of Keith Hernandez because of the drug issues and things of that nature. You know, that said, it's without that one, I don't know. You know, the Cardinals, you know, when you think about past trades, you know, you think about things like Lou Brock and the Cardinals getting the good end of the deal. You think about, you know, getting Ozzie Smith. You think about, you know, things like that. You know, it's tough. I mean, you traded Lee Smith, who could be a Hall of Famer, for Rich Batchelor. But, you know, Lee Smith wasn't going to be, it was going to be a free agent. You got something for him, even though it didn't pan out. We see those kind of trades a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't really care for the, you know, the Edmonds and Roland trades, but got decent amount, get decent stuff back, obviously, especially in Edmonds' case. You know, I've gone through, I still never did finish up the John Mozeliak trade that posts was working on. I need to do right the last one, but you know, Mo's just not been burned on things. And Jockety, for all of his, you know, trade off for trade for veterans, he didn't really give up. You know, Luke Gregerson maybe is the worst thing that they've given up. I think you probably have to go with Keith Hernandez back. I mean, there may be some way back in the day or way back in the, you know, 20s and 30s that would work, but I don't know of them.
Yeah, that's it's so funny that we even have to go back to, you know, the mid 80s to find one of those, because I think that the Cardinals organization has done such a good job, and I think Mozeliak's the best about not getting fleeced, trading at the right time. You know what I mean? I think that he does a really good job of that. I think he's the best. And I, after the question, I sat and thought, and I was like, I can't remember one that was regrettable. I couldn't remember. So when the Hernandez deal popped up, I go, you know what? I love to hear this side of it. Here's what's funny, and this may not answer the question, but it's just a story that's just come from, you know, I come from a long line of Cardinals fans. My grandpa and his brother, his brother lived in St. Louis at the time and still does to this day. That's why I'm a Cardinal fan, and they were great. The minute the drug rumors came out about he and Lonnie Smith, they were ready to get rid of him. And that's all I ever heard in my house, was that how glad they were. Whatever happened was that he wasn't a Cardinal anymore, and they hated him for life after that. You know, Hernandez is a hero in Tulsa, because here was the Cardinals AAA team forever, and you know, he was a star here. So it was funny that he fell out of favor so quick with Cardinals fans, and it was just the stigma of, hey, he was linked to drugs, as was everybody in the 80s. But he was the Tulsa kid who went to St. Louis, who won an MVP and ruined it all. That's what all I ever heard. It was funny. The minute that he posted that trade, I hope they're listening to this, or will, because you may remember this. It was about the time they went to turf, and I remember the joke was they had to go to turf because Hernandez was snorting up all the the chalk on the dirt lines, so they had to do the turf to paint it. And that was the weirdest joke around my house because I didn't really get it, you know. But but yeah, I remember them saying those things.
Yeah, I mean, the Cardinals have been pretty lucky. I mean, they haven't had any really bad trades, and they haven't had a whole lot of just terrible free agent signings, and nothing that burned the. And then when you start looking at, I mean, you can look at so many good trades that they made. I mean, McGuire, like I said, you know, Brock.
Well, Edmonds.
Edmonds
was classic. Bottenfield, that was huge.
That's a trade you can't make anymore.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Edmonds going out. You get David Freese. You've got the J.D. Drew trade where you get Adam Wainwright. You've got Roland coming in, and Roland going out, you know, for that first year with Roy Glaus, you know, hit, what, 20-something homers?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you really, you know, been lucky. You know, and then some of that is not taking on the risk, not making the big splashy trade, especially in the last, you know, 10 years or so. You know, Roland might be one of the biggest last big trades that they made. You know, I had a big name coming in or whatever. I mean, it's a nice situation to not have to have a whole lot of those things of hanging on the back.
Yeah, when you see when you see those players that you left become stars, you know, and you're sitting there holding the bag or nothing at all.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, the Cardinals, you know, as much as Dexter Fowler's homer helped, if game day's any indication, he swung at ball four and hit into a ground double play that ended the ball game. And it's Sammy Stava just put it up on Twitter, you know, the Cardinals have lost three straight games after taking two of three from the Cubs, and in all three of those games had a lead. It's heartbreaking.
Well, it's demoralizing losses, but then you realize it's fixable losses. You know, that's the one thing. That's why you just like, hey, win this series, and I'll feel a lot better going on the West Coast. So, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, they really need to win the next couple, because the Cardinals do have a day off on Monday. And then, you know, three straight in L.A., and then three in Colorado. And a Colorado team is playing very, very well right now.
Yeah, and L.A. is starting to play well.
Yeah.
So it could be it could be tough.
And going out on the West Coast is always kind of an interesting thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Cardinals, you know, last time when we talked last week, I think they were in first place. They were in first place at the end of the Cup Series. They're two games behind the Brewers right now.
Yeah.
And just one game ahead of the Cubs. In fact, if the Cubs hadn't, you know, lost to the Brewers today,
they'd be third tied. Place. Yeah.
I mean, they'd be tied with the Cubs. So, as excited as we were last week about this team and how everything kind of seemingly gelled, it didn't take long for that to kind of spin out of control. And with that road trip coming up, it could be a rough end of the month. So, hopefully it's better. Hopefully we have good things to talk about next week. But for Alan, I'm Daniel. Good night.
Shooter from the belt to the plate. A swing and a miss. And that's a winner. That's a winner. A World Series winner for the Cardinals.